What we started to talk about last week, and I'll just do an example on this, just a little bit on the bios of our law we already covered. But if we take, so first let's remember what the bios of our law says. The bios of our law says that I can get a magnetic field that has the value, it's got a direction and a magnitude, a value given by, basically it's proportional to the current and its direction, and it's also proportional to 1 over r squared of the distance from the current element, and then its direction is given by the cross product of the length of conducting material that the current is in crossed into the point where I want to go. So let's just do one more illustration here. All right. So all right. So let's imagine that we have these are radial from a point here. These are radial wires. And then we have sort of this arc of wire here. So let's call these points A prime, A, C, and C prime. Okay? And let's consider this point here as O. And the total angle here, which is basically the angle subtended by the little arc that we have, is theta. Okay? So the question that we want to know is, what is B here at point O? And we can do this with the bios of our law. So we have information about the orientation and the current in all these pieces. So let's say that the current is going in this direction, okay, through these wire elements. So the rest of the circuit is way out here, we'll just ignore it, but we've got a wire that comes in, does this little thing, and then goes out. All right, so this is I, current I. Now, considering the bios of our law, first of all, we're going to have to integrate. I mean, this is dB, so this is, I have some very small dl here, and I can figure out this little dl, what the dB is at point O from that little segment of dl, right? But to get the total B field at this point, I'm going to have to integrate over this whole set of wire, okay? Well, let's try to break this down. So we have really three different segments. We have B is going to equal the integral, and I won't write it out completely, but from A prime to A plus the integral from A to C plus the integral from C to C prime. Okay? Now, this integral is going to be integrating this, right? So the bios of our law is in here. So there's a dB here, which is this expression. Okay? All right? Does this make sense to people? Okay? So, okay, let's just consider A prime to A. All right? Now, this is radial. Okay? And so dl is going in this direction. And the r vector, r hat, is also, so if we take a dl here at some point, so dl is going in this direction, but what direction is r hat going? Is it perpendicular to that direction? Is it parallel to it? Is it anti-parallel to it? R is the vector from this point dl to O. It's parallel, okay? So here, so for this piece, DL and R hat are parallel. Okay? Now what about C to C prime? Parallel. Anti-parallel. Okay? Okay? Now, if they're parallel or anti-parallel, what happens to this cross product? If somebody wanna... It's zero, right? So that means this term and this term both go to zero. All we care about is this term. So this is the piece that's right there. Okay? All right, so... let's write this out a little more. So this is the integral of from point C to A of mu naught 4 pi I dl cross r hat over r squared. Okay? Now, what can we say for this segment? So we have DL, say, here at some point. What can we say about the angle between DL and R hat? They're perpendicular, right? So that simplifies this a lot. This just becomes DL. Okay, we don't have to, because R has a unit magnitude. So that simplifies life. And so then we can rewrite this a little bit. Okay. And what can we say about how is R changing as we move across this path here? What is the value? How does the value of R for the wire compare for this point here versus this point here? They're the same, right? So that means that this is a constant, this is a constant of integration, this is a constant of integration, this is a constant of integration. So this integral becomes fairly simple. Oops. Okay. So it's just an integral over L. Now, what then this integral is, this is the length of the wire from A to C, okay? And that length is going to be R times theta, okay? It's just an arc length. So if we know R and we know theta, we're given theta, we can write down what this is. And okay, so that means... if we write this out again a little more, so, and then I'm going to integrate here. So I put in my R theta. This R cancels one of those R's. And so what I end up with is mu naught I theta over 4 pi R. Okay? And let me make sure that I didn't make a mistake. And this you have to remember, this has to be expressed in radians. Okay? Okay, so what this is just trying to do is give a little more complicated example of how to use the Biot-Savart law. And by the way, the quiz won't have a problem on Biot-Savart law, even though I said it might. I decided not to, because I wanted to do this example today. So hopefully you could see that if you have a wire, set of wire elements or a path, you could break it down into pieces if there's some symmetry. We've got things that are either aligned with the radius vector to the point we want or perpendicular, and so we can go through this in this manner. Okay? All right. Do people have any questions about that? Any last questions about the Biot-Savart law? No? Okay. So the next thing, now the Biot-Savart law, I mean, that's fine. We can solve certain cases in this case. And we talked earlier about how the Biot-Savart law is kind of analogous to the Coulomb's law for an electric field, right? We described the way in which the structure of this mimicked Coulomb's law for an electric field. But as with the electric case, Coulomb's law for an electric field had limitations. If we had some complicated or certain kinds of charge distributions, integrating Coulomb's law for an electric field could be a pain. Whereas we came up with this idea that Gauss's law, we could take advantage of the symmetries of certain geometries, and we could solve certain kinds of problems a lot more easily. So what's going to happen in magnetism is very similar. And what we're going to talk about here is something called Ampere's law. And Ampere's law fills sort of the analogous place of Gauss's law. So basically, in the electric charge case, let's take, for instance, we consider we have a charge distribution that has a spherical symmetry. And if we're going to do Gauss's law, what do we do? We draw a surface around this charge distribution to do the problem. And what kind of a surface would we draw around this kind of a charge distribution? A sphere, okay? So you'd have some spherical charge distribution because you'd say, well, you know, the only thing that tells me the strength of my electric field is the radial distance that I have from the center of that charge distribution. Okay? And that gives me Gauss's law. I mean, that helps me use Gauss's law, which then becomes, you know, phi equals dot dA, and then it's the charge inside over epsilon naught. So this is a surface integral. So this is what we do with Gauss's law. Now, with magnetic case, we don't have point magnetic charges. We don't have monopoles. But there is actually, and we've talked about it a little bit with Biot-Savart law, there is actually an analogous quantity, which is the field-generating element for magnetism. So what is the field-generating element for magnetism that's like charge for electrical force? What is the quantity that we have seen that creates a magnetic field? Current. Okay? So we're not going to have a little... Current is not a static thing, right? Its charge is moving. So they got to get in and they got to get out. So you're not going to have just a current sitting there in space like you have with a charge. You got to have a way for that current to come in and come out. So it's a little different situation. But current has the same role as charge has. So what we can think of is the analog to this case is a wire. Let's say an infinite wire, but it has a finite radius. Okay? And in this case, we have some cylindrical symmetry. We know, and we've already talked about this a little bit, that basically the thing that dictates the strength of a magnetic field from this wire is just the radius. It doesn't matter whether I'm pointed in this direction or this direction. As long as I know the radial distance, that gives me the magnetic field. So here, like we had with the sphere, what we deal with is a circular path. We don't talk about a surface because, of course, this wire has some extent. There's no surface. I mean, this wire is going to penetrate that surface. We're not dealing with magnetic flux like we were here, but we are talking about drawing a path around a element here, DI, okay, and that current element generates a magnetic field, and I know that at all points on this path, the magnetic field generated by that DI is the same. Just like here, all points on this spherical surface have the same electric field from that spherically symmetric charge distribution. Okay? So this is the analog, graphically, of what we have in magnetism. Okay? Okay, well, that's fine. Well, what is it going to really look like? Well, we've kind of already described it. First of all, we've done this thing with the line charge, and we know that B is proportional to I, and we know that B is proportional to R minus 1. Okay? So it's proportional 1 over R. All right? So we have some idea of how the B field behaves here. And what we want to do is the same thing with Gauss's law that we did, which is take advantage of the symmetries here and see how can we relate the magnetic field to the geometry of the current distribution that we have. So basically, in this case, the important quantity would be B dot ds. Okay? In this wire case, ds is along the wire, and B is going to be, we've already seen, is around the wire. So what is the angle between B and ds? Okay. Yeah. Wait a minute. Hold on a second here. Hold on. I'm gonna confuse the heck out of you guys. I did that wrong. Okay. This piece. That's right. That is true. That this little piece and the wire, the direction of the current, is 90 degrees with respect to the magnetic field. But ds is different. Ds is some element along this path, okay? So if you're going along this path, because what you want to do, like here, you integrate it over this whole surface, right? That's what you're doing here with this surface integral to get the number that's proportional to the total charge here. You want to integrate over this whole path to get the current that's internal to that path. And so what it is ds here is actually sort of the tangent to that path. And there ds is parallel to B. And I'm sorry that I misread my notes for a second. But okay, so I hope I didn't confuse you. Do you see what I'm doing there? Say it again. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I still had Bo sub R in my head. Yeah, no. Ds is very much analogous to what we have here in Gauss's law. Ds is a little piece of the path. Okay? Because what we're going to do is we're going to build up an integral of this path where the magnetic field is constant, and we're going to hope that that's going to tell us something about or be related to the field-generating element, which in this case is the current. So what we already have seen is that for the wire, I mean, we've already done this, essentially. Is that we have this integral, the ds the B.DS becomes a BDS. Okay. Now, we already know, and this becomes a B, and then a path integral around the path DS. But we already know from our application of the Biot-Savart law what B is for this wire. Okay? And what it is it's mu naught I over 2 pi R. And then this path integral here is going to be 2 pi R. It's just the circumference of a circle with a radius of R. Okay? So that means I have 2 pi R. Okay? Now these two pieces cancel, and what I end up with is the path integral B dot ds equals mu naught I. This is the analog for magnetism of this for electrical. And this is called Ampere's law. Okay? They're not exactly the same. I mean, I've said it, I'll say it again. We've got a path element, ds, instead of an aerial element, da. We're integrating over a path, a closed path, whereas in the electrical case, we were integrating over a closed surface. The reason is because we're dealing with moving charges here with current as the field generating element, and so we don't just have a static point in space that has current. The current has to go somewhere and come from somewhere. Okay? But mathematically, we've still related an integral over a path that is taking, in the best case, advantage of some symmetry, namely in this case, that the field is constant at this radius, for all points at this radius, on this particular path, and that there is a simple angular relationship between the ds vector and the magnetic field, and that is related to the current in the wire. Okay? Now, the thing to complete this is the question of, well, what current is this? And what it is this is actually I, is the current which penetrates the surface bounded by ds. Okay, so this path that we're integrating, each little ds, okay, this bounds a surface here. Whatever current that passes through that surface, that's the I that we're talking about. Which is, again, just like in Gauss's law, we don't really care if there's charge out here. It's outside of our surface. We only care about the field-generating piece that is internal to the path, in this case, that we're dealing with. Okay? So it can be helpful to you to acknowledge, I mean, there's certainly different cases, but see the symmetry between Gauss's law and Ampere's law, okay, and the way that they're applied. There's plenty of differences, but they are similar approaches to the problem. And so if we can start thinking about paths the way that we were thinking about surfaces, you know, any time with Gauss's law, you know, we would be very happy if we came across something that looked like a sphere, a cylinder, a can, a line, or a sheet. Because those are all symmetric cases that we could deal with this integral of the dot product. Well, here, we got to think about paths that we can do that with. And so these are a little different, but circles and boxes or rectangles serve some of the same purposes as the cylindrical and spherical situations we had before. Okay? So this is Ampere's law. And this is one of the fundamental laws in, well, certainly in electromagnetism, but actually in physics. This along with Gauss's law, is one of the four, these are two of the four, what we call Maxwell's equations. So there are four equations that this whole course is basically about that basically describe all of electricity, magnetism, and optical phenomena. And with it, quite a bit of engineering and technology and that we have. Okay, so let's try an example that may remind you of an example we did with Gauss's law to illustrate a little further how you use this. Okay? So let's just really zoom in on a wire here. And let's say that this wire has a radius of capital R. All right? And the total wire has a current I, and it's got constant current moving down this wire, okay? Meaning the current density, every little region has the same density of current, all right, in it. Now, what I want to know is, I know we just did, if I wanted to go to a radius out here of little r prime, what is the B field? Well, I just did that. We just did that, right? We just see that it's proportional to, you know, 1 over R, and we did that with Biot sub R, okay? Now, but what happens if I want to figure out what is the magnetic field at some radius, little r, that's smaller than capital R? Okay? Now, this is analogous to the case where I have a spherical, uniform spherical charge distribution, and I want to know what is the electric field at radius R that's less than the radius of the charge distribution. Okay? So, if I want to apply Ampere's law, well, first, I need to pick my path. So what path would you pick in this particular case? Where would you draw this path? That's an unfair question, but I ask it anyways. So I want to know what the B field is at this radius R. So what is the B field at radius R if it's pointed in that direction? How does the field compare at this point versus at this point? The radius is the same. They're the same. They're equal. Okay? What if I go a radius R in this direction? What is the B field? It's the same. So at all points with a radius of R, I have the same value. What is the shape, the geometric shape, that describes the line where all the magnetic field is the same? It's a circle. Okay? So I can draw a circular path here centered on the axis of the wire with a radius of R. Okay? So I'm going to want to do a path integral on that surface. Now, that's fine. But we have Ampere's law here. What we know is we're only going to care about the I that's inside the path. Okay? So we need to write this in a little bit different form. So let's consider little I is the current that's inside this particular path. Okay? If we follow this surface, so there is a region of the wire bounded by that path, and that has current little I in it. Okay? It is the portion of the wire that is within a radius R of the center of the wire, what is the total current in that portion of the wire? It's certainly not the current in the whole wire, capital I. It's some subset of that current. So the way it's going to scale is we're going to say, well, this region of the wire has a cross-sectional area of pi r squared, and that is a certain fraction of the total cross-sectional area, pi capital R squared. We're going to multiply this factor by capital I. So we're going to say if this path covers half the area of the wire, then little I has to be half of capital I. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. So we're scaling. We're saying, okay, that's fine. So now we can certainly put this in for our current over here. Now we know what the current is that's bounded by our path. So let's try to do this. So now we have this integral over here. What is the orientation between ds and b? What's the angular orientation? Go ahead. It doesn't matter if you're wrong. Well, okay. It's a good try. But ds is now the element. It is a little piece here along the path. Okay? And what we've seen before is that when we have a wire of current, the magnetic field wraps around the wire. So, right, if I have a wire like this, the magnetic field wraps around that wire. Okay? So, if we look at that here, that means that B is parallel to DS. Okay? I'm seeing some yeses and some looks of bafflement. Okay, I'll go a little further. If you have a question, let me know. So if this is the case, so now my dot product goes away. It becomes much simpler. So now it becomes the integral of B dS equals, and I can simplify this a little bit, mu naught R squared over capital R squared times I. Okay, I'm just simplifying that above expression. Now, what can I say about the value of B at different points on this path that I've chosen? It's constant. So I can move my B out of the integral. And what is the integral of the path around a circle? It's a circle. Okay. It's this exactly. Okay, it's exactly. It's a circumference. So this becomes 2 pi r. All right? And now what I can do is I'm virtually done. So I want to get everything on one side so I can figure out what B is. And so if I go through that, this is what we get. Now what do we see? What we see is here, everything is a constant except for little r. And what we see is that the magnetic field then is perpendicular, is proportional to r. So what we found before was that if we were outside of the radius of the wire, that we got a behavior like this, where this is perpendicular to 1 over r. Okay. Now what we're seeing is inside the wire, it's proportional to r. Okay. This is very similar to that spherical case where we were looking at what the electric field was as we moved out through the wire. Okay? Moved out through a spherical charge distribution. Once we got outside of the charge distribution, it was going up as 1 over as R, and then it started to fall off. It's just there, it fell off as 1 over R squared. Here, it falls off as 1 over R. Okay? Does anybody have any questions there? All right, so now let's take this a little bit further. So these are now getting into the items in electronics and other things that we would start to care about. We can consider a case in which we have a current sheet. All right, so we have I going in here. Now, and we can think about this as, let's just have our sheet here, and we have I going into the page, or into the board, okay? So that's I. What direction in this configuration is the magnetic field going to be above the sheet? This is an infinite sheet, too, by the way. But what direction is the magnetic field going to be above the sheet? Is it going to be, well, the way I've drawn it, is it going to be to the right? Is it going to be sort of downward to the right? Is it going to be perpendicular to the sheet? Downward to the right? Like this? Okay. What about underneath the sheet? The other way? Okay. I'm assuming the other way means that way. Okay. Okay, right? So this is, how do you get that? Just for everybody, you have, it's going to be I or DL, the vector in the direction of the current, cross R. So this is the Biot-Savart law. And that makes it go in that direction. And then below it, it's I, dr, so it goes into the board. Okay? So this is getting the direction. That's using the Biot-Savart law. Now, but what we would like to know is what is the magnetic field value from this? And using the Biot-Savart law would be quite painful. So what we could do is we could try to consider, let's look at Ampere's law again here, and we can look at this shape here and try to think of what the path would be that would allow us to do this. And it's unfair to ask you to remember this, but this is very similar to the case where we had a sheet of charge, okay? And so we drew a surface in that case. But what, in this particular case, what path would you draw? What shape?
Rectangle.
Okay, right? So let's call this piece the width, and this piece here the height, or the length. I'll use the word length. Okay? So if I want to know the magnetic field generated by the current in the part, I only care about the current in the part of the sheet that's internal to the path I just drew. So it's that crosshatched region. So what I need to do is B dot ds for three different pieces. Okay, we've got, if we do A, points A, B, C, and D, we need the integral from A to B, plus the integral from B to C, plus the integral from C to D, plus the integral from D to A. Okay? Now, let's take A to B. DS, the way that we've drawn this, is going to be in that direction. So, and in this particular case, the way that I've drawn this, on this side, I've just taken this sheet and flipped it like this. So B on this side is this way. So B and DS are parallel. Okay? So we're going to get a value here. Okay? We'll come back to that. C, B, the path from C to B, what is the orientation of DS and B? So this piece here, what is the orientation of DS and B? They're perpendicular. Okay? So this piece goes to zero. C to D, B is now going down, and DS is also going down, so those are parallel. Okay, somebody said reverse parallel, close. And then this last piece, D back to A, that also goes to zero because they're perpendicular. Okay? Now, I can actually use symmetry here. This situation is the same as this situation. So these two pieces are equal. So what I really can deal with is okay? So I'm just doubling that piece. All right? All right, now all right, this isn't really the units that we want, because what we know is that we have some total current in this whole, there is some current in this sheet, but it's an infinite sheet. What we really know is that we have a current density, which in this case is current per length. All right? And so we should really rewrite this as our current density times the length of the piece of the sheet that we care about. So J, which is the current density for this sheet, times the length of the sheet that we care about, tells us what the total current is. So we really want to write this in terms of JL. Right? We've already said that B dot DS, these two are parallel, so this becomes 2 times B DS mu naught JL. How does the value of B vary over this path? So from on any of this, any point in this path, how would the value of B vary? We have an infinite sheet. It's going to be constant. It has to be constant. Okay? So then I can take the B out of the integral. What is the integral from point A to B of DS? So what is the, another way to say it is, what is the length from point A to B of that path? L. Okay? So this becomes 2BL equals mu naught I L. Mu naught J times L. And if I want to get this all with B on one side, what we end up with is mu naught J over 2. Okay? So that's the magnetic field. You'll notice that R never occurs here. L, W, they don't occur here at all. This is analogous in the electrical case to this. This is the, when we had a sheet of charge, we had the charge density divided by 2 times the permittivity constant. Well, in the magnetic case, you see the structure is similar. You have the current density divided by 2 times the permeability constant. Okay. we still have some time here. Now, one other element that comes out of this that goes just from this shirt, this sheet that we just dealt with, is the idea of a solenoid. Okay? And then this will finish the discussion of sources of magnetic field. So, we've talked about the case where if we have a loop of... Yes? The magnetic field, that was B, I'll write it over here, mu naught J over 2. That's what we solved. And all these notes will be posted so you can check. But okay. Now, we've seen that if we have a loop of current with I here, that what happens is the shape of the B field is such that we could use the Biot-Savart law. So we always have dl cross r. So the way that that translates is that we get magnetic field lines that sort of loop around this wire. Okay? All right, that's the geometry that we get. So it's just a result of the fact that we have a wire and the magnetic field always, if the current is going in this direction, the magnetic field loops around that wire. Okay, this is something we've just been using a lot when talking about the Biot-Savart law and Ampere's law. So if I took this wire and just wrapped it into a loop, this is the configuration I would have. So in the region here, the magnetic field lines are all going in, and I probably haven't drawn it very well. Okay, so I got the arrows going in the wrong direction. Okay, so the way that I've drawn this with the current going in this direction, inside this loop, the magnetic field is always going through the loop. And then outside of it, of course, the B field is going this way. Okay? That's fine. That's one loop, whatever. But what's actually useful is to make many such loops, to pack them together as close as you can. Because if I can get current going through this loop and I get this magnetic field, I can multiply that magnetic field by many times by just smashing a bunch of loops together and having the same current go through them. Okay? And this is what we do with a solenoid. And this is going to be a rather lousy drawing of it. But it's basically a spiral of wire where you just have the same current going over and over, around and around again, and you get this, they're all right up against each other, and so you have a current going in here, you can have some number of turns, okay, and if in this case I got a magnitude of B field here I would get B total equals B times the number of turns. So if I had 1,000 turns, I could get 1,000 times stronger magnetic field. And that magnetic field is going to be going down the axis of this solenoid. Okay? So this is called a solenoid. Now, I will not go through. The way that you apply Ampere's law to this problem is actually very similar to what we just did with the infinite current sheet. The point here is, if I were to really compress this and I took a cross-sectional area, I would end up with a solenoid that looked like this. Okay? So this is if I took an actual solenoid and I just chopped it in half, okay, lengthwise. So what I would have is these wires would be wrapping around like this. And in here, the B field is like this. Now, if this distance, D, the size of this solenoid, is small, if D is much length, much less than L, then what's true is for every point in here, it's as if I am near an infinite sheet of current. Okay? So this magnetic field in here becomes uniform. Okay? And there's no magnetic field outside of this solenoid. It's all inside the solenoid. The reason being is that these wires are so closely spaced that this wire, in this region here, the magnetic field from this wire cancels the one next to it outside of the solenoid. That doesn't happen inside the solenoid, but outside of the solenoid, the magnetic fields cancel. Okay? So, and I will just do this very quickly. The way that you can calculate the magnetic field is if you use Ampere's law and do what we just did with the infinite current sheet, you can draw a box, okay? And let's imagine that this box has some length L, and again, we'll do exactly what we just did with the infinite current sheet. We want to know what the magnitude of the magnetic field is inside of here. You're going to have a B dot ds, and that is going to equal the current, the total current through this region, okay, so there's several of these wires that are going through this region, so this current is little I, okay, and little I is going to equal the number of turns inside that path times the current in one wire, in the wire, okay, I sub zero. This integral here is B times the length. I'll leave that to you guys to check, but just look at what we did for the infinite current sheet. Okay? And then I have this, mu naught I naught times N. N is the number of turns per length. And I have to multiply this by L. So if I have some number of turns per length times the length I'm looking at, L, times the current for each turn, then I have this expression. And so the L's cancel out. And so what I have is this. So the magnetic field in a solenoid is equal to mu naught times the current in the wire times the number of turns per length. Per unit length. Okay?